Welcome to Answering the Call with host Elizabeth Ficicello. In this program, Elizabeth gives us a glimpse into the spiritual journeys of priests, deacons, and religious sisters and brothers from the Columbus Diocese who have heard and answered God's call. And here's your host, Elizabeth Ficicello.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 and streaming live on stgabrielradio.com. I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli, delighted to be here for another episode of Answering the Call, where we get to meet some of our priests and our deacons and our religious sisters and brothers who serve our diocese with their beautiful vocations. And our guest today is the youngest deacon in our diocese, Deacon Jeffrey Fortkamp. And he serves over at Our Lady of Peace Parish in Columbus, Ohio, and he's here to share his path to the diaconate and give us some insights from somewhat of a younger perspective, so that should be very interesting. Welcome to Answering the Call, Deacon Fortkamp.
Thank you. Great to be here. It's my honor.
We're honored to have you, Deacon. And now, you were a cradle Catholic from a multi-generational Catholic family right here in Columbus, Ohio. So why don't you start there by giving us a glimpse into the kind of Catholic upbringing your parents provided for your family?
Good. Well, I come from a wonderful mom and dad, and I have a twin brother and an older sister, and we were active Catholics, religiously going to Mass and celebrating the sacraments, and definitely it was an integral part of our young life, and many fond memories.
Did you have any devotions in the family, or?
Yeah, it's always interesting when I hear families talk about praying the rosary together. In fact, our pastor often talks about that. We didn't necessarily do that, but I do remember religiously going to Mass and celebrating the sacraments, and that being something that was very important to my parents. And even when we were on vacation, it was always something we did. There was no exceptions.
Okay, and your roots go way back to Our Lady of Peace Parish, because you started there as a young boy. How did that parochial school nourish your faith?
It certainly did. It certainly nourished my faith in a sense that it was such a wonderful, loving community. It still is, and that's mm-hmm. why I send my boys there. It's a community. It's a smaller school with one class per grade, and so there was definitely a bond with my peers, my students, but also who, even today, we're still close friends, but with the teachers and the principal and just the extended community there. It's just wonderful, and that definitely helped keep me Catholic mm-hmm. in those younger years, yeah.
Did you serve on the altar as
a boy? I did, yeah. So my twin brother and I were always together serving and through grade school and high school.
Wonderful. Now, for high school, you attended Bishop Watterson, and you would continue meeting influential people there to help with your faith development. Who in particular were you meeting at Bishop Watterson?
Well, certainly, they have a wonderful staff at Watterson, faculty and staff, but it was certainly Deacon Frank Annarino who came to be very influential in my discernment for the diaconate, which I hope we can chance to talk a little bit more. But so certainly Deacon Frank, but also there were several priests, a retired priest, Father Hulsman, who was my spiritual director. I didn't really call him that
right.
then,
but that's how he was serving.
He was serving
you, yeah.
in that capacity, really, in my high school years and throughout college, even. And that was two particular people that were very influential in my high school.
Okay,
from Watterson, yeah.
Solid Catholic high school.
Yeah.
And then after high school, for college, you attended Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio. Now, that's a Lutheran-affiliated college, your first non-Catholic environment.
That's right, yeah.
Did your Catholic faith flourish there?
It was, there were some very good moments, but I would say that for the most part, it wasn't a period of my living an active Catholic faith. I would go to Mass, and there was a Newman Center on campus, but I wouldn't say that it was a time in my life that I felt really engaged in the church or alive in my faith, and that really led me to look for more things after I graduated.
Okay, so you kind of developed kind of a hunger for more, because
exactly.
I guess it sounds like you weren't really being spiritually fed in that environment.
Right.
What were you thinking about doing academically? You know, what were you studying? What were you thinking career-wise?
Yeah, I was thinking business. You know, that's make money and provide support. Although I think fair to say that even in college, I was there was something in the back of my head talking to me about a discernment to a vocation. But I was really thinking professional life and business, and so I ended up studying business and psychology, and really thought that's what I was going to do.
Well, and it is a question I usually will ask our deacon guests is, if priesthood had ever entered the picture for you in discernment, was that ever a part of the picture?
It was more so after college in my 20s, and okay. I had done a lot of discernment around the priesthood, both on the diocesan as well as in the Jesuit community. But I probably could say, looking back, there was something there, some call to serve, even in grade school, certainly in high school, and
that that desire to serve would actually have you do something very concrete after high school. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So after college, I went to serve a year with the Jesuit Volunteer Corps, which is kind of like a domestic Peace Corps program, in which I live in a community with men and women who are placed in jobs in the community, similar to AmeriCorps program as well. And we live in a community, we work and share a common Catholic faith. And so that was a transformative year for me, and that really fed me where I was hungering after college for something spiritual, and that was an incredible year for me.
So was that your prime motivation to be fed for taking a whole year? Because that's a big commitment to take a whole year of your life when everybody else is jumping into careers,
and
right.
Right. Yeah. So all my friends are getting their first jobs and doing that. But I kind of justified it in a sense of I was working, so I was still building my resume, if you will, but also having this incredible opportunity to serve, to be in a completely different community, and then to have this wonderful spiritual community around me, mm-hmm. praying for me, praying with them. It was incredible.
So, what specific work did you do with the Jesuit Volunteer Corps?
I worked in a group home for young men, guys that are without a family, trying to transition to adulthood, and that really gave me a great appreciation for the needs of the poor.
And then after that year, what'd you do next?
I came back to Columbus, where my family was, and started on that career track. I thought I wanted to be that professional track, working in corporate, and eventually going on to earn a master's degree and then a law degree. And as my wife kids me now, no more degrees. She's cutting me off.
Well, what happened after the year of the Jesuit Volunteer Corps? You know, the service thing was there, so you know, that priesthood idea was sort of in the mix, but something along the way must have happened that you would discern that priesthood was not where God was calling you at that point.
Yeah, I think it was definitely my involvement in my work and seeing the impact that I could do in working with people, whether it's in local government or in the nonprofit sector, and certainly falling in love with my wife, and which happened in my late 20s. But all of those, I think, really led me to the awareness that maybe I'm called to something different than the priesthood.
Right. And that's an aspect of answering the call, is to know where you're not being called.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an equally important, obviously, discernment, so we can find where we truly are being called. We're talking with Deacon Jeffrey Fortkamp. He is the deacon at Our Lady of Peace Parish in Columbus, and he's our guest today on Answering the Call here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. And I'm your host, Elizabeth Ficicelli. Now, Deacon Fortkamp, you were finishing up your master's in public administration, and this is when God put that young woman in your path by the name of Tracy. Tell us how she would impact your spiritual journey.
She, I was often kid with her. She kids with me, saying she's going to ride to heaven on my coattails, but I often just reverse it and say it's on her coattails. And she may not be as public and outward in her faith, but certainly her commitment to my vocation to the diaconate and her life as a mother, as a wife, I think is exactly a beautiful vocation and one of the many things I love about her. And so we did date And
now she wasn't Catholic though at the
she
time.
She wasn't
right?
Catholic, and as always, kid too, said, "Don't convert because of me. Convert because this is something you believe in. This is something that you want." And that was the case. So.
And you're absolutely right about that. You have to do that for yourself. And she was working in a similar field, so you already had a commonality there.
Yeah, and I was working for the city and working a lot with homeless, and she was working at a homeless shelter doing development for them, and a mutual friend connected us.
Okay. And then after that degree, then you did begin to pursue yet another degree. As
right.
you said, that was law school at night. You got married to Tracy. And you would end up becoming an attorney with a heart for service.
Yeah, that's right. And so my professional life has always been either in local government, the nonprofit, and that's always stayed there. So I don't practice law. I don't, in a sense of representing clients. But those skills and experience of law school have been invaluable in my professional career. So
that's wonderful. Yeah. You know, when you think about your solid Catholic background, your heart for service, and your years of discerning a way to serve the church, the diaconate seems to be the perfect answer for someone like you. So how and when did that take shape for you?
Right. I think then at a point where I realized maybe I wasn't called to the priesthood, maybe called to something else, I really began in earnest to talk with Deacon Frank and mm-hmm. kind of help to discern maybe it is the diaconate. And so for him, think rightly so, making sure that it wasn't a true call to the priesthood. But we just kept in touch and continued to have conversations, and he is wonderful about that, not only because he was a teacher of mine and we had this long friendship, but because I think of a sincere desire to promote the diaconate and in the diocese. So we kept in touch, and that just fed that.
And that began the process.
Yeah.
How was Tracy open to that? Because I know she would eventually convert to Catholicism and
right.
become quite active
yeah.
in the parish herself.
Yeah, yeah. She's our PSR program director, and she does a wonderful job with that. But she converted before we were married, and so we lived, as a happy Catholic couple. And but realizing that, you know, that may be something that I would do, you know, so. Some guys are football coaches, or some guys are scout leaders. For me, you know, it was my time in the church. That's how I spend my free time. And so even before the diaconate, I was involved in the church and doing lots of different things there. So it wasn't foreign or a huge transition to make for her, and knowing who I am and what I do. Yeah.
And as a young couple, your children were young too. In fact, your third wasn't even born yet.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, I think that she was going to have her hands full, obviously,
yes, yeah.
as you'd go through formation. And we're going to talk about that in a minute as well. But I was curious for you, going through the diaconate program obviously requires a lot of classes. Our guests in the past have done a good job talking about all the different classes they've been taking. But how was that for a man with advanced degrees like you had going back to school?
Right. Yeah. And that's a good question, because I did have some coursework before, but it was all in law or public administration or business. And so I really didn't have, except in high school, any philosophy or theology. So that was really, I was learning new or certainly trying to recall a lot. And so for me, that continues, and rightly so, but you know, that I'm continuing to learn about my faith and read, and always reading, but that was a huge hill to climb for me, just getting up to speed.
And we hear that a lot from our deacon guests, that was really the first time they really started delving into their faith. You know, it was a complete education for them.
Yeah.
So you were ordained on November 29th, 2008, at the age of 38. Canon law says you have to be a man of at least 35 at the time of your ordination to the diaconate. So that is why today you're one of our youngest, I think you said officially the youngest,
yeah,
by just
so.
A little bit, but the youngest deacon in our diocese.
Right. Yeah, as Frank likes to call me, the baby deacon.
The baby deacon. And so let's go back to Tracy now for a minute, because as I said, your family was young, you had two, you're going to have a third. How did you balance all of that?
Sometimes better than others, I have to admit that. But certainly, I don't want to forget my extended family. My parents and my siblings live around the corner from us, so they were always willing to help. But certainly it was a difficult balance at times because there were Saturdays that I was at the Josephinum the whole day, and that made a very tough, difficult extent being with my sons all week,
right,
for my wife, and then another day I'm gone. So, but you know, we were committed to it, and I think we thought, well, maybe it'll slow down once we get ordained, but it hasn't quite done that, just in a different way. So, but I was quick, you know, if there was a need, I was home. You know, there was one time my wife called frantic, finding head lice in one of our sons. So I left the Josephinum quickly and went. So it was, you know, and as Frank was quick to remind us, it's family first.
Right.
So, you know, God, family, work.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And that is something else we hear from our deacon guests, that the bishop and Deacon Frank are very, very clear about that. It is it's the vocation, it's the commitment you made first, the sacrament you made
right.
first.
Exactly. So. Right.
They do come first. Now, was the knowledge that just traditionally, if a deacon's wife passes away, that it's not the norm to marry, did that cause you any hesitation in answering the call to the diaconate, being that you're so young?
Well, we did talk about that. My wife and I did. And so we pray that that never happens.
Sure.
And, you know, that I think that's something we'll have to, a road we'll cross, you know, if we come to it. But that is definitely something that's in the back of my mind, hopefully. Again, it'll never happen.
Right, a bridge you won't have to cross.
Right.
But it is something that I do hear men talking about, and that is a serious commitment. And, you know, another thing, many men might be tempted to think that the diaconate's not feasible because they have a young family or because of their current career situation. What might you say to them?
Yeah, I suspect that, and I'm talking to my own friends in my own parish, that, you know, that's a question that often comes up. But I suspect when they look at their lives, their days and their weeks, they're doing just as much outside of the family as they may be doing. So it's just a matter of shifting. So they may be, as I said, coaching or working with scouts or work themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, their job is, instead of 40 hours or 50 hours, it's 60 or 70 hours. And so those hours maybe could be better used serving the church.
Or in
vocation to the diaconate. So I think that's the question I would ask, you know, is how you're spending your time now, and, you know, are you willing to maybe shift those hours someplace else?
Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that I was reading somewhere that the diaconate is growing. There are a growing number of men entering the diaconate. Do you happen to know, like, say, nationwide, are there younger ones coming in? Is that part of the trend, or
there, you know, that's a great question. I don't know. I know that those stats are available. There is a National Council of Deacons, and there is a stat that of the ages, and I think that there. I don't even want to say because I'm not sure, but I think there is. I want to say that there's a younger in foreign countries, but not as much in the United States. That it continues to still be. Something that is considered a kind of a second career, if you will,
right.
or you know, kind of that post-retirement
exactly.
vocation.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And so Frank's working hard, Deacon Frank is working hard to change that paradigm of the vocation. Yeah.
Good. Good, good, good.
Yeah, which is good. Yeah.
Now, you are the deacon at the parish you grew up in, and I'm sure that has its advantages and disadvantages, no?
Yeah. Oh, certainly. Yeah. And I would say one advantage is to have such a loving, supporting, caring community that I know how the parish works and all of its warts as well. But I think that adage is true at times, that sometimes maybe a prophet's not welcome in his hometown, you know, and but I wouldn't say that it's always been the case. But I mean, maybe that was my fear going in, that certainly they could be friendly to me when I'm sitting in the pew, but if I'm preaching, how is that going to go? And so that caused a lot of worry and anxiety in me. But, you know, I guess I just trust in the Spirit that what I'm saying is what.
And is it typical that a deacon would be assigned to his home parish?
I think it has been. But I think that it's important to understand that we, as a deacon in the diaconate, we are ordained to serve the bishop in the diocese first. Yeah. And so wherever best we can serve, typically that has been in our home parish, because there's been a need for the diaconate in the parish. in our home parish, but some deacons may be assigned to a ministry that's diocesan-wide or maybe to a neighboring parish, depending on need.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so in other words, the bishop wouldn't ask you, okay, can you pick up and move to the very southern tip of Ohio, you know, uproot your whole family?
Right,
that's not
yeah,
typical.
I think that was one of our worries when we were getting closer to our nation. What are we, you know? But no, that was very clear that the bishop's not going to ask you to do something that you can't do.
Right. Or serve the Hispanic community if you don't speak Spanish.
Exactly, and yeah, which I don't. Okay. Yeah. Right. But yeah, that's right. But recognizing the talent. So maybe if, given my business and administration background, there may be something, a need in the diocese that I can fill with that background and experience, and that may be outside of my parish, right?
Does it take a couple of years to break into the diaconate, so to speak?
Yeah, Deacon Frank would always say it's a good 3-year, you know, that lectionary cycle, and sure enough, it took about 3 years for me to get to that, you know, comfort of preaching or maybe preparing couples or celebrating the sacrament of baptism, I think that's right, and I think that's okay. I think we should be allowed to have that time of transition.
Okay.
In the ministry.
And so now that you're feeling comfortable now in your role.
More comfortable, right.
what would you say you like best about being a deacon?
I do like probably the best is just being able to interact and minister to the people, to be a presence, just not on the altar, but everywhere, just knowing that I'm there to help them. And so whether that's when I'm over visiting the school or watching sports, but especially in the church space, that I'm here to help. And, and so hopefully individuals, whether they're lifelong friends, I've known them forever, or new, that they feel that I'm here to help.
That's good. Yeah. And what would you say is the most difficult part for you, the hardest part about being a deacon?
Well, I think at times it is tough to have those difficult conversations about our faith that maybe are controversial or difficult. So preparing a couple for marriage and having to have wrestle with difficult issues in that marriage preparation, or maybe to wrestle with a difficult topic of our faith from the pulpit, from when preaching. And I tend to be kind of a introvert at times try to avoid conflict and tension. But I think sometimes we have to be that way. We have not be afraid to speak the truth.
Right. Yeah. I guess if we're going to follow Jesus, we're going to end up being controversial. There's no getting around
right,
that
exactly.
One.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us like a snapshot of a typical week, you know, just so people can understand if they're not familiar with what a deacon does, you know, a typical week that, you know, what your work might bring you to.
Right. So for each deacon, depending on their assignment and their parish, it may be different. But for me, I help with our RCIA program. And so that's on a Thursday evening. That's 2 to 2 hours, maybe more that night. Maybe every other week I'm working with a couple, marriage prep or some other ministry. We have a baptism prep that I help with as well. And then typically on the weekends I'm there. We celebrate 4 masses. On the weekend of Saturday, one Saturday vigil, and then 3 on Sunday. And so I'm there. So if it's 8 to 10 hours, I think that's what, you know, we kind of try to at least set as a goal. But that will just depend on the needs in that week. Next week will be a little busy.
And probably every week is different.
Right.
Probably another nice thing about the diaconate, that your job, your responsibilities could change, the people you're dealing with, the situations.
Right. I try to, if my boys are practicing at sports across the park, then I can go over and help at, you know, meet with someone while they're practicing. So I try to schedule things and accommodate things around the family, most importantly.
Good. And do you have any favorite spiritual heroes or saints that you kind of get some strength from in your role as husband, as father, as deacon, as Christian?
I like to think of one, St. Elizabeth, who is my grandma, who was really influential. We didn't get the chance to mention her before, but I believe in those saints unnamed that are there praying for us. So I think of St. Elizabeth. But St. Joseph in a special way, as a father who and a husband who loved his wife, but also loved his son, Jesus. And so I try to be that good, loving, supporting father to my sons and to my wife.
That's wonderful. He's an awesome patron saint for all of us, for our church. And in our last minute together, Deacon, you know, what might you just say for advice for men, particularly younger men, about the diaconate and how to answer the call if this might be something that they feel is going on in their heart?
I would say this to all men, whether they're discerning vocation to the priesthood, if you're single, or to married men, is just to ask, go and explore. Look at the website. The diocese has a great website. So if nothing more, just if you hear my voice, go to the website and read about the diaconate, read about the priesthood, and just go and just think about it and read. I think that's the one thing, is it's so easy to put off, but just to go and learn and to ask, and then talk to people, talk to a deacon, talk to a priest, and just to learn more. It's our schedules are always going to be so busy that it's easy to put off, but just to go and explore.
Those are great words. And would you leave us with your blessing?
I will. Good and gracious God, we thank you for all that you give us every day of our lives, even though we may not know that it's there. We ask you to bless this ministry of this radio station, and to bless its workers and all it that hear the words that come through. And may it be an inspiration to us in our daily lives of faith. We ask this through our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you again, Deacon Jeffrey Fortkamp, for your inspiring story. I'm Elizabeth Ficicelli, host for Answering the Call. I hope you'll join us next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. and Sunday at 4 for another edition of Answering the Call. In the meantime, have a great week. God bless.
If you know a priest, deacon, or religious sister or brother that might be interested in telling St. Gabriel listeners how God inspired him or her to answer the call, please contact us at info@stgabrielradio.com.